Hello and welcome to today's program in the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Kevin O'Malley. I'm chairman of the Business and Leadership Forum here at the club and your host for tonight. I would like to mention also that we are doing a membership drive right now. Our associate director of membership is a lady named Alyssa in the back with red hair. You saw her coming in. She'll be here afterwards if you would like to find out about membership at the club. There are substantial discounts. If you were a member, you would have gotten in free tonight for a Monday night program. Fridays are also free, and regular programs are substantially discounted for club members, as well as language classes, travel, a lot of great things. So if you are interested in that, please talk to Alyssa after the program. And now I would like to introduce our speaker for tonight, who is Kit Yarrow. Our program tonight is Gen Y Decoded. Let's tell you a little bit about Kit if you don't know her already. Kit Yarrow is the envy of her friends. After all, it's her job to go shopping. In truth, she spends more time at her desk analyzing research. But the job of a consumer psychologist does involve field research, too. Kit is an award-winning consumer research psychologist and a professor of both psychology and marketing at Golden Gate University in San Francisco. She chairs Golden Gate University's psychology department and is the 2009 Outstanding Scholar of the University. Kit taught consumer behavior at universities around the world, from Slovenia to Malaysia, including the Helsinki School of Economics and UC Berkeley. Her consulting clients have included General Electric, Del Monte, Landor, Nokia, and AAA. And with that, I would like to introduce Kit, and we will have questions and answers at the microphone after Kit's presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I think I'll be mobile. There we go. So here's what we're going to do tonight. Get a little overview of what Gen Y is all about, what common concerns and complaints are about Gen Y. And then we're going to go through some tips and tactics to help you manage, lead, and teach Gen Yers a little bit more smoothly. Okay, so here's what a lot of people seem to think about Gen Y on the more positive end of the spectrum. Generation Y, those are people that are between about 11 all the way up to 32 now. I think it's a pretty big generation. In fact, I think it would be better if it were split in two. But people that are teaching, leading, and managing say they're fantastically confident. They're really eager to engage. In many ways, they like their Gen Y students or employees better than they have students and employees of previous generations. They feel closer to them. They're basically colorblind, completely open to diversity, great team workers, and so on. But there's also a lot of negative that comes up around Gen Y. There's a lot of reasons why people are struggling and kind of figure out how to teach and manage them better. What's up with this group? What are some of the things that you've encountered in trying to teach or manage or lead Gen Yers? What are the complaints that you've either experienced or heard from others? Needy. Belt it out. You don't have to raise your hand. Just belt it out. Needy. Easily distracted. A sense of entitlement. I think I hear that one more than anything. How cute that it comes from a Gen Yer, too. See what I mean? They're so lovable. What else? That's it? Need a lot of direction. Too many options. They're on the phone when you're trying to talk to them. They're texting when you're trying to talk to them. So these are some of the things that I've heard when I've talked to managers and leaders about Gen Y. The common complaints seem to center around things like that they have trouble with either writing or analysis or math, that they need those step-by-step directions, that they're entitled, that they get bored too easily and they can't focus, that they don't care enough, or there's no sense of working hard as a requirement for this. Anything that's not up there that you've heard about Gen Y? Poor trainers. They're poor trainers. Okay, this is a new one for me. I will keep that in mind. I think one of the ones that I hear the most, and one of the reasons why I wanted to reapply the research that I did for my book, which was 11 focus groups, 100 surveys, 100 interviews, and a 2,000-person survey, I kind of repurposed that towards understanding Gen Y as employees and students. Because it kept coming up that it was less satisfying in some ways to manage them or to teach them, that their lack of natural respect for hierarchy made the job of managing and teaching them a little less gratifying. And so what I think we should do now is understand them from their context of life. I think if we look at them sort of in comparison with the life that you had growing up, we'll get to the heart of who they are a little bit better. So go ahead, once again, belt it out. What were the products that were essential when you were a teenager? What did you have to have? A pair of jeans, maybe two, three at the most, but certainly not the average today, which is 11. What else? A stereo. That shows that you're a young man. Other people would have said a reel-to-reel or a record player or something like that, you know, basic something. Okay, what else? Well, so you were one of the rich kids, huh? Okay, we got your number. Gas money, right. Sir Richard was smoking cigarettes, okay. And a rotary, like if you were really, you know, cool, you might have had a princess dial-up in your room. Otherwise, you know, any sort of phone would have been good. But basically, when I ask people this question, not a whole lot of things come out. It kind of turns out that people really didn't seem to have that many requirements when they were in high school compared to kids today. Today, kids have an entire line of multicolored, every single sort of Victoria's Secret bra that's out there. You know, it's part of their wardrobe. When I was in high school, we didn't even wear bras. So compare that with what kids, compare that with what kids need today. And you know what? These aren't just wants, but kids have to have access to computing. They need their phone to socialize with their friends, a lot of times a Starbucks card of some sort, video games, an internet connection. And then you add to that that we have a slightly more superficial society today, and the clothing that people wear to demonstrate who they are to others becomes actually more important for this generation than it was for younger people. And so that sense of entitlement around all the products that kids seem to need today, actually, if we put it into context, is sort of part of the society that they're growing up in. It's not just greedy. Okay, question two. What's the process you went through to write a high school paper? Belt it out. Went to the library. Joe? Chisel and rock? No. Oh, God. Plagiarism is one way to get it done. What else? Carbon paper, maybe. A Xerox machine, maybe. A typewriter, all that sort of thing. If you know what this is, if you've actually used this, you know, that tells me something about how old you are. But just consider that really kids have been writing their papers on computers really just in this past generation. Anybody before this generation was using any number of assorted things from typewriters, again, to the chisel and rock. So the patience that you've acquired, those of you that know what that is, in order to get through writing a paper is really quite different than the level of patience that's required for kids today. A kid today would be immeasurably bored by having to ride their bike to the library, look up things on a card catalog, hand write it in their notebook, and then go home and type it on their typewriter. Add that to the fact that today kids have access to basically all information. You had access to only what was in your community. Maybe if you were one of the rich kids, you had an encyclopedia in your household. But other than that, you know, your parents, what they knew, your neighbors, what they knew, your teachers, what they knew, and what you could get your hands on in the library was all really you had to work with. Only what was there. So your challenge actually was in harvesting information. Today's students' challenges are in editing information and in sustaining their focus long enough to make sense of the information that they're just overcome with. Next question. When you were in high school, did any of you guys tell your dad what to wear? Tell your mom what to wear? Tell your parents what car they should buy? Do you know today 80% of kids influence the car that their parents choose to buy when they're in high school, all the way down to 10 and 11-year-olds. Obviously, they influence even a greater percentage of the technology that comes into their home. and an even greater percentage of the entertainment that comes into their homes. Today's kids are highly influential. There's less of a hierarchy between them and their parents. There's really this flattened hierarchy that means that they have much more power and influence in their households than you guys, many of you guys, could even have imagined. I could never have told my mom or dad what to wear. I mean, not a chance. And my dad went through a very bad period where he needed to be told what to wear. So let's talk basically about what makes this generation different. Everybody says, you know what, every generation thinks that they're, you know, completely different from the next generation. How come you're making a big deal about Gen Y? Are they really different? You know what, they really are different. Because there's two things that have occurred with this generation that have never occurred before. Number one, this generation grew up from day one using technology. That is absolutely a tsunami of change. And number two, there's never been a generation that's had more clout, more influence in their homes and in society. Very different. So let's talk about how that manifests. Okay, a few little stats here. In case you were wondering, yes, Gen Y really is that integrated with technology. I mean, it's just incredible. And these are just a few of the many numbers that we can look at to let us know how important technology is in the lives of Gen Yers. And not just how much, but look at the exponential growth. So it's not just that it's increasing or expanding, it's exploding. And so that means that in 5 years or 6 years down the road, we don't even know what it's going to look like. Technology is so ingrained with Gen Y. So a baby boomer maybe has 130 friends on Facebook, and a Gen Yer will have in the 450 range. A baby boomer, about 50% of them will answer their phone during a meal, and with Gen Yers, it's more like 80%. Gen Yers are twice as likely as any generation to wake up first thing in the morning and check their email, check their Facebook status. They're more twice as likely as any generation to actually check a text message while they're having sex. No, I'm not kidding. 11%, which really just tells you that they're not doing it right. So this is the graph here. I mean, look at this is what I'm predicting for change. I mean, we really don't even know what the future is going to look like. But what we know is that we have to prepare ourselves. Because if we're leading and managing Gen Y and we're grappling with the change that we're faced with today, imagine what it's going to be like in 5 years or 6 years. There is no way that you can lead, manage, or teach Gen Y and say they'll get over it. Things will go back. We have to change. We absolutely have to adapt to this generation. Another example is to look at the difference between people in their 20s and people in their teens. A huge intergenerational gaplet. They're significantly different. And I found this out primarily by talking to people in their 20s who consistently said to me, oh, well, I were nothing like those teenagers, though. They saw an enormous difference. And why wouldn't they? This is the technology that people in their 20s dealt with when they were in high school. This is the technologies that teenagers have today. People in their 20s, they didn't have text messaging or Wikipedia or their own cell phone. I mean, look at the change within a generation. And if that doesn't convince you that in the next 10 years it's going to be completely different, I don't know what will. So this is how I think technology has psychologically affected this generation. So much so that I call it their third hand and second brain. In other words, it's completely integrated into who they are. It's changed the way they think. Yes, absolutely. It's affected their cognitive functioning. They literally think differently than other generations. They have shorter attention spans and less focus. They feel more powerful and more influential because, in fact, they are. They get to bring together a group of people, as we've just seen around the world, and change history, change countries, change their social life, affect businesses. They actually do have that much power and influence. And of course they feel that way. And that's really because of technology. It's influenced their relationships. I think many psychologists worry, not necessarily for the positive, that it's created a more superficial relating among Gen Yers and less of a intense and deep intimacy. And it's also made innovation and new and change ever more important to them. Here are some of the ways that I think leaders and managers and teachers perhaps experience this influence of technology. I want what I want when I want it, which oftentimes mean, where is my promotion and why do I have to study that? So their impatience that we talked about at the beginning of this session, I think really comes through more understandable when we look at it through the lens of technology. So when we're leading and managing Gen Yers, we absolutely notice that lack of focus, that they tend to get bored more easily with anything, relationships, jobs, explanations, menial tasks. They're more visually oriented. They require visual stimulation. They're more used to viewing than they are to reading. They like those competitive games and challenges. 98% of them play video games and have regularly since they were kids. And they respond to active engagement rather than more passive learning. And there's a downside, too, to technology that I think everybody needs to pay attention to, and it's not really discussed as much as other things. And that's that Gen Y is also completely overloaded with options, which has created a great anxiety in this generation. They're looking, actually, for your leadership. They're looking for trustworthy guidance. They've lost faith in a lot of institutions that other generations have had the pleasure of trusting, and they want to feel like somebody's going to help them. So if you're leading or teaching Gen Yers and you feel like you're not necessarily getting respect from them, keep in mind that some of that is masked by their anxiety, and deep down inside, I think they really are looking for people to help them. The other thing that's not so much talked about is the way that technology really creates a superficial society, that Gen Yers always get their say, but they aren't always heard, and they know it, that they may follow 4,000 people on Twitter, but they don't actually read any of those feeds, and they know nobody's reading their feeds, and that they may have 438 friends on Facebook, but they can't really keep up with them, and frankly, they don't remember who some of them are anyway. And instinctively, they know that means that they're not necessarily remembered. I think status for this generation really has come down to being seen. That this generation, despite all of their influence and their power, in many ways feels very invisible, very disconnected with other people. The second thing I talked about was confidence. So let's move on to that. So some of these are the effect of technology. Now let's talk about the effect of all this confidence. So this generation grew up with the self-esteem movement in schools, where you got an A for showing up, an A for effort, where the focus was really on you are special, not necessarily on you're part of this community of people and we need to work together and you're a cog in the wheel. You are the car baby with this generation. And they've also grown up in a society that's really prized youth. So this generation has said, has been told, that when you're young, you know, you're where it's at. Movies are made for people that are 18 or 19 years old now. That's the average age. In your generation, it was around 32. So being young is so important. Imagine what that feels like when you're young. What do you have to look forward to? It's kind of downhill after that. You got a carpe diem. So I think there's this sense of confidence that about what they have now and also this urgency to live it up now. And then we talked about less hierarchy in family and empowered by the internet. We also have a generation of parents that grew up afraid. So if you're a baby boomer, when you reached about 22, there was higher unemployment than there is now. There were tons and tons and tons of people looking for jobs and no jobs. There was a great sense of fear, I think, in baby boomers, which inspired competitiveness. And baby boomers became one of the hardest working generations ever. And this generation didn't want their kids, I think, to feel that competitive fear. And so there's been a more protective parenting. I think there's also been so much information about the world that kids, the lack of safety of the world that kids grow up in, that this generation has overprotected their kids in some ways. So the sense is that bad things can crumble you. In previous generations, bad things were meant to be overcome, and therefore you had proof of your power. Other generations thought bad things weren't necessarily bad. They were a challenge. I mean, look at our war heroes right over here. I mean, they overcame all of this and became stronger as a result of it. Kids today, I think our perception as parents sometimes is that if they experience these bad things, it will mar them in some ways. And that's changed our generation. And here's some, it's part of their confidence that everything's going to be okay. The idea that they can rest on, I think, the safety of their parents, that they've been told that everything is going to be okay, that showing up is good enough, that there's an A for effort and that they're special. And so here's some more statistics that will verify that. Certainly, I think we've seen that this sense of hierarchy being irrelevant is part of Gen Y. But look at these numbers of Gen Yers who really think that they're, in fact, going to be great leaders, which makes you wonder where the followers are. So what this means to leaders and teachers and managers is that they're going to want to expect more attention from you. They're going to want more appreciation and feedback. They're going to want things personalized and tailored around them. And they're not going to respect you unless they think that there's some reason why they should. So it's not a given that if you've achieved a certain level that you're going to get respect back automatically. I think one of the things that leaders and teachers struggle with the most is the difficulty that Gen Yers have with criticism. So I do this workshop at Stanford regularly with their faculty, and one of the professors that I spoke with last time said, I've gotten these lower teaching evaluations because my students complain that I teach by correction. Thank you. Right. I had the similar reaction, which was, you know, kind of wondering how, if you just keep waiting for them to say the right thing and then you go, yeah, good job. You know, that would be a very difficult way to teach. And then the last thing, too, is that they do want to get closer to you. So, you know, after I did focus groups with people in their 20s, I thought it was really charming that over and over again, I would get invitations to go party with them at like 11 o'clock at night. And you know, I think another generation would never have thought that that would be possible or assumed that I might want to. I mean, I didn't actually go, but I really appreciated that they felt that closeness to me. And they, you know, there's no boundaries there. So another one of the downsides, I think, with this generation that people don't recognize is that when you're told you're special and when you're told not to settle and when you're told you can do anything, it makes it really hard to feel good about the choices that you have made. So this, you know, kind of brought me to tears over and over again when I interviewed my 20-somethings, which was that they would consistently say things like, how do I know when I've picked the right guy? Or when I've, if this job is good enough? Or if I'm doing the right thing? I think all people in their 20s kind of wrestle with this, but this generation has more choice anxiety than any other generation. Gen Y's greatest fear, I think, really is that they'll be ordinary. If you're told that you're special, in a way, my gosh, that's a really high standard. You know, there's no just being ordinary. That's being a failure. And so that quest to be special is so much a part of this generation's DNA. One more thing I want to touch on briefly before we get to our solutions. Another thing I think we have to keep in mind with this generation is, in fact, they're maturing later than other generations. They look so good. I mean, they look mature and, you know, they've got all these beauty products and grooming products. You know, guys in college actually spend more on personal grooming than girls do. No, I swear to God, two different surveys this fall. It just went into that category. Anyway, that's beside the point. They're looking good and they look mature. And so I think sometimes we mistakenly assume that they in fact are mature. But if you look at all of these numbers and dozens of others, what we find is that in fact, Gen Yers are maturing at a later rate. And so sometimes I think our expectations of what a 22 or 23 or 25-year-old should be doing in our classroom or in the office, you know, maybe a little bit inflated based on where they are emotionally mature. And let's face it, they're not really alone. Part of what's going on with Gen Y is a complete societal shift towards it being all about me. So when we complain about the narcissism of Gen Y or the entitlement of Gen Y, part of it really is a complaint about our society because we have become ever more superficial. And there has been a gravitation away from a sense of community and connection with others and obligation to others towards introspection and each individual being special and unique, and everybody else is supposed to value that uniqueness. So it's not just Gen Y, but I think they feel it more because this is what they grew up with. Okay, so you're ready to figure out what to do about it? Okay, here's our six keys. First of all, I hope that in this discussion, I know some of it seems a little depressing, but what I really want is for everybody to kind of understand what Gen Y is all about. Because I think if we empathize with the fact that they didn't ask for this, they grew up in this. We parented them, our society raised them to be the way that they are. You know, this isn't like a defective generation in some way. Some of the problems we think we experience with Gen Y are really just a change in our society that has to do with this sense of the individual and also technology. So if we empathize with them just maturing in this particular age and not being defective in any way, I think that makes us less angry and reactive towards them. The second thing is that I think you have to give yourself some empathy too. So in addition to, understanding where Gen Y is coming from, when you feel angry or upset or disappointed or insulted in some way, you have to understand the reason why. Your values in a lot of ways are being challenged. You know, these are not thinking things. These are feeling things. These are values which are ingrained in people. And when they're challenged, it's upsetting. So you got to give yourself a break too. The second thing I want to talk about is that there has been this shift away from a sense of community towards the individual. And what this has created, I think, is a lot of noise from some Gen Yers. And so the second tip that I have is that you really have to protect, I think, your perspective and your focus so that you maintain a balance. Here's an example. So if one person complains loudly three times and says the same thing, the average person will perceive it to be the opinion of the group. So if you have one student in your class or two students in your class that give you a big, loud, bad time, which, as you saw from the last slide, they're kind of allowed to do now. I mean, our society is more permissive of that sort of roaring behavior. What you can perceive is that all of your students are angry or aggressive. And so you have to protect your perspective to understand that it may be the small percentage of Gen Yers that really are flaming narcissists blazing off at you. The rest of them are probably great, great students or great employees. And so to kind of protect your focus as well so that you don't spend all your time on that tiny little group of people that are roaring away and you direct and purposefully manage your time to keep your focus on the greater good. Which leads me to the next one, which is to pick your battles. It's the same sort of thing around issues. And so Gen Yers, because of, I think, their voice, come at you constantly with their needs. They want the feedback. They want it now. They want direction. There's so, what I hear from managers and teachers is that there's constantly much more activity coming towards you. And so what you have to do, I think, is to be proactive and directive in how you choose to respond rather than reactive. If you spend all your time reacting to what Gen Yers are asking of you, you really won't be in control of your life anymore or your job or your teaching career, and you'll feel like you're just being kind of batted around. And so you have to kind of pick your battles, and you have to be a confident leader and decide what it is you're going to choose to address rather than reacting to what Gen Yers are throwing at you. Because they are going to talk to you more and tell you more about what they need and want. And they do need more feedback than other generations. So this is a big psychological shift, I think, in most baby boomers to kind of protect their focus and their purpose. add along with that, you know, the sense of staying with the community. So the other part of picking your battle is to try to teach Gen Yers through your action to stay focused on the greater good rather than on any person in your, you know, workforce or any person in your classroom's individual needs, but to keep going back towards we're working as a community here. We're working as a team in this organization or in this classroom. And so to censor people that are kind of warping that direction of your focus, energy, and communication. Okay. Next thing we need to do is to get some boundaries going there. So what I mean by this is that we have to, I think, reinforce the notion of accountability. The A for effort, you know, they've been trained to expect the A from effort. They're not great at taking criticism, but frankly, it's not real world. And I think this is where a lot of the conflict comes when they get into graduate school or college or in the workplace, is this sense of, you know, I should be getting an A for this, or I should be getting a promotion right now. In 1970s, the average student studied 24 hours a week. Today, they study 14 hours a week. This is the average college student. In 1970, the average college student had a 2.5, 2.6 GPA. What do you think it is today? It's a 3.4. So when they get into your employment, obviously they're going to be thinking that they get more for less, right? And so the notion of accountability, rules and regulations, I think really helps people to feel both pride for when they do achieve, training for the real world, and then also the pleasure of accomplishment. And it keeps you sane as well, you know, in the meantime there. Okay. Here's another example of why we need boundaries, and it starts with a cow. Nice, thank you. So one farmer has a barn, and he has a fence around the barn. And he has a bunch of cows. And where do the cows go? They nibble grass all over the place. They go all the way up to the edge of the fence and enjoy tasty morsels of grass and frolicking away throughout the entire farm. So what would happen if we took away the fence? So let's take it away and see what happens. They're going to huddle near the safety of the barn. You know they will, right? Okay, so why do they do this? Without boundaries, people tend to gravitate towards a safe center. If you put boundaries around your expectations in the workforce or your classroom or rules and accountability, people will move all the way within those boundaries. So there's actually a lot of anxiety reduction with boundaries. And this is something that I think Gen Yers really need. Okay, next one. So since Gen Y doesn't have that inherent fear that other generations do, that they're going to be tossed out onto the street and live in a car or something like that if they don't get the right job, you know, they have the sense of safety that they can move back home. They're not motivated by money the same way that other generations are. And so what they're motivated by is a sense of purpose. And I think we have to give it to them. So more than other generations, I think we have to really be clear about context, purpose, and a vision that makes sense and is motivating. The next one here and the last one is that you have to shift your space and style. So without a doubt, we all have to rise up to the game, show that we're innovative and learning. I mean, if we want people to learn and grow, we have to learn and grow too. And one of the ways we're going to do that is by also shifting our pace and style and accommodating and using more technology in the way that we do business. So you are, in fact, if you want your employees to succeed and you want your students to succeed, you're going to have to give them more feedback, and you have to give it back to them faster. I think you just have to do it. And you might need to explain things twice because there's a little bit less focus. And you need to freshen your examples so that they seem more relevant more often. And deliver information in little bits and chunks instead of in big pieces. And try new tools. So I use the word technovation, which is really using technology to show innovation. So this is a generation, actually, that's used to doing it themselves. They love do it yourself. They're willing to do checkout at the grocery store, shop online. They don't trust institutions in the same way, and part of their empowerment has been that they rely on themselves. So they like actually to learn and grow and do new things on their own. So if you're training people at work, you can use technology. If you're teaching people, you certainly want to use technology. And then you want to think viewing rather than just reading. So visual communication, stories, field work, these sorts of things, they resonate more with Gen Y. So I want to thank Golden Gate University, my home for 20 years that I love, and Jen Bai, my book, and my publisher, Josie Baspin. Mostly I want to thank my husband, Russ, for spending Valentine's Day with all of us.
Okay, thank you, Kit. I want to remind our listening audience at home that this is the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Kevin O'Malley. I'm chairman of the Business and Leadership Forum here at the club. Our program tonight is Gen Y Decoded, Insights and Tactics for Leaders, Teachers, and Managers with Kit Yarrow, professor and chair of psychology, Golden Gate University, and the author of Gen Y, which you can find on Amazon. So if people do have questions, if you would like to line up here, please, and we'll have questions for about 20 minutes. And I'm going to ask the first question now. So I'm at the end of the boomers. So now for me, I get really annoyed sometimes with these Gen Y people. If I'm in a position, a teaching position, or a position of having to work with them, or God forbid that they're my clients and they're paying me, so then how do I correct them? How do I tactfully go about getting them back on the right track?
Hang on just a second. So if you're a consultant, it's obviously going to be really different than if you're teaching them, because we do get to grade them. So it kind of depends. I mean, I think if they're your employees or you're teaching them, you know, you get to set some standards. And if you do it in a kind, you know, empathic way where you're more mentoring them than correcting them, that would work fine. If you're working as a consultant with a Gen Y-er, though, I think that'd be really different. I think it's a tender situation that you'd have to step lightly. I mean, there's no doubt about it that this generation does not take criticism well. So, you know, I don't think you can flat out criticize somebody you're consulting with and have it work at all.
Okay, thank you.
Darn! I got like consultants in the room.
Do you know, is there a higher rate of suicide amongst Gen Y? All the reasons you just gave us about what makes them what they are?
You know, I haven't seen anything about that. I don't know. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Thank you.
There's certainly a higher rate of medication. But I wouldn't... No, there is. I mean, it's huge, huge jump, like double, triple. But I think that that's partially because there wasn't as much medication available to previous generations. So I don't think, you know, I'd make that just a flat out, they need it more. It's also more available and more acceptable to take. And let's face it, the baby boomers self-medicated with pot anyway.
I don't remember. Kit, do you notice any correlation or any differences with respect to culture and society? So, for example, as you were talking tonight, I kept envisioning we're talking about U.S. citizens.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if there's any differences in the European communities, Asian communities, Central Asia, and so forth.
That is such a good question. In the next book, it's going to be international. I only did my research on U.S. citizens. So although certainly anybody that watches the news, we can see these very same things, this optimism, you know, the sense of power, you know, it's just tremendous. So I would have to assume that there's a lot of similarities around the world. But since I didn't actually do any primary research on that, I don't feel totally comfortable saying. What do you think, Jeff?
Well, in teaching students, I do notice some similarities, mostly in terms of what I find teaching at the graduate level is a real resistance to numerical analysis.
Yeah.
And not just the resistance, a complete unfamiliarity.
Right.
And I notice that is just across all cultures. that we teach, for example, at Golden Gate University and at other universities as well. But grappling with the issue about, you know, tell me what to do and I'll do it, the step-by-step versus the critical analysis.
Right.
I haven't really, you know, gotten a handle on it because right. I see it here and there, but it's anecdotal. I haven't really been exposed to any research, nor have I done any.
I have heard that every place I've gone, this problem with a lack of tolerance of ambiguity. And yeah. I think it's related to the higher levels of anxiety that they have, that when things are ambiguous and they don't have a path that's set forward for them, you know, it's less tolerable than it was for previous generations. And that's partly why I think, you know, we have to be really aware that sometimes when they look angry and sometimes when they refuse to do things, I think it's more anxiety than anything else. So I think we have to be very aware of that anxiety.
Thank you.
And they come by it naturally. You know, no older generation has had so much to deal with in terms of choice overload.
So it could be technology. It could be modern marketing. It
yeah.
could be those kinds of things, those yeah. impacts
yeah.
on the individual as they're growing up, the
True.
Societal change.
And technology is a separator, you know, in some way. Not that any of us would give it up, and we feel very connected, you know, but baby boomers use technology to facilitate and orchestrate connections that they've already made, you know, family, friends, and so on. You have to think Gen Yers are using technology in a different way. They use technology to make connections, and those connections never feel as intimate. And so I think the nourishment of intimacy is also missing from this group to some extent.
Thank you.
Actually, I had the same question.
Projecting
this internationally,
yeah.
and I'll just share an observation
Please.
Of mine. I have been consulting in Latin America, and the younger staff members generally need more attention.
Right.
They're getting closer to you, you know, all of this. The older ones, you just give them something, they're off, and they do it. So there does seem to be something there. I'll look forward to your book.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for excellent presentation. In the early 1970s at University of Washington, Barry Commoner, I don't know how many of you heard of him, he was challenging the technology, and actually a book came out as Careless Technology. Well, do we celebrate now, or are we showing some sorrow about what happened?
That's a good question. And I think there's no one answer. I mean, certainly, would any of you go back? Not a single one of you. We love it. It's so great. But I think that finally, you know, there's some warning flags that are coming out. Like, it is wonderful. Technology is fantastic. But we have to be in control of it. And I think our brains are changing, even for the older people, you know, and maybe that change is what's going to be the appropriate brain for the future. You know, we don't know. So it's not like we can go back and kind of mourn the loss of, you know, that slow, steady focus that we have all enjoyed. But we have to think about where slow, steady focus is really required and how we can make that part of our lives. And for me, I think as a psychologist, I worry most about empathy, which occurs face-to-face. Our neurons fire when we're in the same room with somebody in a different, completely different way than when we're talking with somebody online. And that interpersonal connectedness and sense of community that I think is in jeopardy. That's my great concern. But I think, you know, it's just this process of working it out, you know, that it's new. And hopefully, you know, we'll come together and kind of work on ways to have technology in our cake, too. Thank you for your question. Hi.
Hi.
You look like a Gen Yer.
Yeah.
How'd I do?
I just made the cut.
Okay.
By a year. I actually had a question going back to information overload and,
yeah.
you know, sort of the step-by-step break it down for me directions. Mm-hmm. Do you think that might have something to do with because of so much information out there and, you know, as a Gen Yer, I just want to be, I'm not that confident in my work, so I want to sort of just throw it all in there to make sure that I've covered everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, how would you suggest or what would you recommend to someone like me who often feels a little bit overwhelmed by information to sort of like assist them maybe for filtering it?
Yeah. Wow, that's a good question. I would say friends talking on the phone. You know, there's a whole process. So you're talking about more as a student than making sense of life?
Yeah, generally.
Yeah, right. So, well, one of the things we know is, you know, to immerse yourself in information as much as you want and then to back away from it for 8, 10, 15 hours sometimes a day and have fun and then come back and see what filters through and then go through the same process again. And, of course, I see you have the hearts on, so you're at Golden Gate?
Yeah.
Yeah. Our fabulous, incredible librarians at Golden Gate are really good at helping our students to analyze which sources are going to be relevant. So just get rid of half of them to start with.
Okay.
That'll help, too.
I work in the law library. I'll find a few of them.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing this talk. I'm a public school teacher in Oakland. I've been teaching 5 years.
All right, cool.
Which means I'm a veteran teacher, unfortunately.
Good for you. Yeah. Did you hear what he said? He said he's a veteran teacher. He's been there 5 years.
But my question is, the dropout rate has been increasing, not just in Oakland, but nationwide.
Yeah.
And I think with the increase in technology, the effects of that, the dropout rate will continue to increase because of state standards or national standards in which students are – they're so used to picking what they are interested in.
Right.
That now they're being forced to learn things that they have no interest in.
Oh,
so I'm curious if you think there needs to be some sort of radical change in how standards are given to the youth in order to either make school more relevant or decrease dropout rates.
Yeah. I'm not an expert on education. It certainly sounds to me like we need some changes. We do have an expert on education in the room. Carolina, you want to know? Do you have anything you might offer? Yeah. What do you think? What do you think would be the solution? I mean, you're right there. Who knows better than you?
No, I think there needs to be I think there does need to be a change in standards. And if we want people to if they're losing empathy, there's no reason why we can't make empathy, like creating activities around empathy, a state standard. If you want a populace that cares about, I mean, that's how
and community
works.
You know, empathy and community.
Right.
I mean, we don't teach civics anymore. We teach self-esteem.
Yeah. Or like financial literacy would be a good one as well.
Oh, my God. Wouldn't that be fantastic? That would be great. Yeah, another good choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And good job. Thank you for teaching for 5 years in Oakland. Okay.
I'm not a Gen Y.
Uh-oh.
But I was thinking about the concept of, for those that are technoids here, the Moore's Law and how technology changes so radically, and yet sociologically we change much more slowly. Put it in the context of the parents of the Gen Yers and the influence that they had and what they saw. And certainly they saw the Internet, but they also saw cell phones, and they also saw 24-hour news. And you didn't mention 24-hour news, but I would be interested in your thoughts on this in terms of bringing the whole world into the home more dramatically than ever before and bringing all the problems of the world into the home more rapidly and continuously so that people became possibly more threatened and more protective of their children.
That's absolutely true. I think that's a very good point, that all of the information that we have about the lack of safety in the world, you know, the whole world has become our problem, whereas in other generations, I think we had less information, still cared, but there was less anxiety around that as well. And just the idea of choice overload, too, you know, there's a great study that I like that, you know, somebody puts out four jams and, you know, more people buy one of the four jams for display when there's only four of them than when there's 12 out there. More people will sample 12, but they won't buy because they come overwhelmed and kind of anxious about which one. So the more options we have in some ways, the more stifled we become and the more we see of the world in some ways, obviously, the more, you know, the more wonderful it is, but also the more anxiety-provoking it is. Yeah.
Firstly, thank you for such an
insightful and actionable presentation. This is so helpful.
Thank you.
And I love Russ, too, so I hope that's not awkward.
I feel like we should make that flame thing happen again.
One of the things that I'm struck by, and I think is the key word that you've said again and again, is empathy. And it's interesting because I'm hearing that on a cerebral level, yet at the same time, on a gut level, I feel frustration that the empathy is so one-sided, that the onus is on us who are working with Gen Yers to adjust everything that we do in order to get better work, to work more collaboratively, and all those sorts of things with them. And it's not just the Gen Yers, but it's also they have the reinforcement in many cases of their parents.
Oh, yeah.
And we're reading so much about parents participating in, you know, calling college deans, and you might see this at Golden Gate.
Performance reviews.
And actually calling in their real jobs.
Yes.
Calling to question the performance review that a 25-year-old gets in a business. So it's not that they're not being validated, but from people who are outside of that Gen Y world. And it just strikes me that after seeing a presentation like this that's so insightful, I've never come across anything directed to Gen Y that is directing them to how to better understand and work better with us. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on why.
Yeah. You know, that's such a good question. Thank you. So, you know, I have interviewed a lot of managers and asked them, you know, who are your best Gen Yers? What do they have in common? And it's so interesting. So often they'll say, well, they went to training boot camp. They went to... So organizations that invest in setting a standard of culture, you know, that is a little bit more community-oriented and with more accountability... tend to have less trouble with Gen Yers. I think it's part of the boundary thing, you know, just setting the standard of what's going to be expected. You know, in my classes, I've actually had to kind of lay down guidelines on politeness. I know that you can't leave while another student is making a presentation, for example, which 5 years ago I would never have had to say, or that you need to send a thank you note when you get an informational interview. And you know what? It may sound like the students would take that as sort of patronizing. They love it. They really like it. They kind of want direction. So I think the solution there is maybe that companies have to recognize that they're not going to intuitively get it, and that there has to be some sort of sense of, this is the way we're going to be, and if you want to be part of our team, you're going to be like this too. And I think, you know, in a way, great companies that maintain great employees are always going to be more coveted, and they're probably going to have those programs, and you know what I mean? It's going to end up being the place where people want to go, and hopefully it'll become more of a standard. The other part is that truly, I think most Gen Yers aren't that ferocious lion. And so the protecting your perspective by noticing all of the other Gen Yers who are great team players, who are really interested in you, who are not having their parents call you, you know, and really pay attention to them and direct your focus to them and try not to pay as much attention to the few that are just kind of outrageous. Because the ability to be outrageous is just a lot broader today, you know, and it's shocking, I think, to many of us. But most parents don't call. The few that do get a lot of press. I've had, you know, we've all have, haven't we? But it's really pretty rare. Most of them don't call, so... And youth, when you were 25, I don't know, you might have been different because you're kind of a superstar. But when most people were 25, they weren't that interested in the old folks in the office either, you know? So when you were that age, part of that is just also maturity, you know, that you become a little bit more other-directed. Okay.
Hi, thanks so much for your presentation.
Thank you.
I was just reflecting on the fact that when I was a teenager in the 70s, we had... two levels of reality. there was face-to-face time, and there was the telephone. And now we have children from the age of 7 upwards having to deal with 4 levels of reality at all times. You have to deal with the telephone, with texts, with what's on your cell phone, and what's on Facebook. And so that means that everyone in this Generation Y is gifted with multitasking. They have to multitask to function socially. So I would want to invite you to comment on how we as teachers and managers can make use of this great gift of multitasking and can set up our work and academic environments to take advantage of that ability as opposed to trying to squash it.
No, that's such a good point. And there's so many ways that we can get more out of our employees and students by using multi-platforms, without a doubt. And, you know, that's kind of the sixth point that I think is really important, that we have to up our game as well, which also shows that we're young and still learning too, you know, which is something that we want to mentor our employees and students to embrace as well. And think about, you know, how we can use multi-level platforms in the ways that we either do business or teach. You know, it's just a requirement today. Yeah, good point. Okay.
Hi. Kit, this whole concept of the power of influence in the household is very interesting to me. And we talked about technology and information overload as kind of contributing factors of that. And I'm wondering if there are other psychological drivers, particularly for the parents, that kind of let that happen,
that
and what they might be.
That they allow their kids more latitude?
So what kind of, what's going on in the parents' minds to kind of let that happen, even though there's lots of technology and lots of information?
You know, I think that parents today have some different sorts of motivation than previous generations did. I mean, if you look at the trajectory of parenting, it's gone from, you know, your kids are kind of like your workers in your future, to your kids are like your responsibility, to your kids are an equal member of the family. So there's been, you know, really for hundreds of years, like a change in our perspective of the role of kids in the household. So part of it is this closeness and friendship that parents have with their kids today that I think changes their parenting. And then there are some parents in our more superficial society that use their kids as a showpiece. You know, so if, you know, you get the little bumper, you know, sticker, my kid is an honor roll student. You know, that parent obviously gets a lot of juice from their kid's success. And so the kid's behavior, you know, is really in a lot of ways just a way of showing off to their community who they are. Anyway, and this friendship that parents have with kids today as well, you know, this sometimes is born out of guilt, you know, that they have so much and, you know, they treat their kids more equally. So if you put those things together, what you end up with is definitely a slightly more permissive and flexible parent than we've ever seen before. And a parent, and this is really the key point, who cares more what their kids think of them than any other generation of parent did. If I could, you know, change one thing, it would be to care less about your kid's opinion of you. You know, that would help a lot of things.
Well, it kind of goes back to that slide you had with the cows and the barn.
Boundaries are good.
And boundaries are good, and maybe the boundaries have been taken away, and so they kind of huddle back for safety.
Yes.
But they're not really learning how to be. That's anyway.
Kevin, it's after 7. Is it okay if I keep taking questions, or what's the protocol?
We can take these two more questions.
Two more questions, okay.
I guess I have to quote Yogi Berra.
It ain't over till it's over?
No.
When you come to a fork in the road, take it?
No, you've seen it all over again.
I like that.
I have a sense of deja vu from all of this because I'm from Generation W. And I had the same problem with Generation Y. There's an assumption that because you're of an older generation that you necessarily have wisdom. And that's the one thing that I'm having trouble dealing with here. just because you're older doesn't necessarily mean that you're wiser. And so you're not necessarily in a position to lead and to guide. And sometimes young people know things that are in fact wiser. I learned an awful lot from the peace movement in your generation. Your generation taught my generation a lot. And it's only a caveat that I'm bringing here.
Okay. Thank you. There definitely is a lot to learn from this generation. Yeah.
And touching on the point, I was wondering with Gen Y, have you seen much interest, especially those Gen Ys in their 20s, in social activism, you know, as we've reached this kind of Sputnik moment? And
wait, say it again. I think I haven't heard you yet. Go ahead.
Oh, much interest in social activism?
Yes.
And now that we're kind of in the Sputnik-like moment, and if there's much nostalgia for the late 60s in that activism?
I don't know if I have an answer to that, except to say that a lot of the Gen Yers that I've spoken with really see that there's a parallel between them and the boomers, that in fact they're both generations of social activists. They're both generations of change agents. You know, Gen Yers tend to actually really like baby boomers, unlike baby boomers who didn't quite like their parents that much. And they see these parallels in, you know, this activism and desire for change and, you know, confidence to do things differently. Okay. Well, thank you all so much for, and Kevin has a few final words.
Okay. Thank you very much. I want to thank our speaker tonight, Kit Yarrow. Our program tonight has been Gen Y Decoded, Insights and Tactics for Leaders, Teachers, and Managers. I'm Kevin O'Malley from the Business and Leadership Forum. I want to thank our audience here tonight. I want to thank our audience listening at home. And right now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club, celebrating over 100 years of enlightened public discussion, is adjourned.